Well, this is Dr. Strand here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. Of course, we welcome your calls ordinarily out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Dr. Jerome Corsi. If later in the program we do want calls, we'll certainly ask for them. But please hold your calls for the time being. Dr. Corsi has written a number of other books on the oil situation and on the danger of Iran. But most recently, he's written a book on the Minutemen, and along with Jim Gilchrist of the Minutemen. And you go into the background of really what's happening as far as illegal immigration, but they do what nobody else has done, and that is, why is it that the administration, not simply the Bush administration, although the Bush administration is certainly as bad, if not worse, than any of the other administrations, as far as the immigration issue is concerned, why has the Bush administration steadfastly refused to enforce the laws of this country, which requires, of course, checking on immigrants, stopping people from coming into this country illegally, arresting and fining employers who actually hire people that they know to be illegal immigrants, and doing everything they can, of course, to monitor people who are in this country illegally. That's not been the case at all. So that led to the question, why? Certainly, we have a program on the border. It's known as catch and release. They only catch about one in every four of the people who come across the border illegally, and yet, of course, they immediately release them. The Mexicans, they take to Mexico and release those who come from other countries. Why, they tell them just to come back for a hearing, and you never guess what happens. Most of them just disappear and don't come back for the hearing. And it really doesn't make sense. Why would intelligent people do something like that? Well, I'm going to let Dr. Corsi tell you that. Good evening. Thank you so very much for being with us, Jerry.
Dr. Stan, it's always an honor to be with you. Thank you.
Why don't you just go ahead and pick up the story here?
Well, you've done a great job of laying out the context. In Minutemen, The Battle to Secure America's Borders, we discussed Jim Gilchrist and I, the founder of the Minutemen Project, my co-author. We showed Dr. Stan that we raised the question why President Bush would not secure our borders. You know, we know we have a war on terror. We document in the book that Hezbollah agents who came across the border, they bribed Mexican consular officials in Beirut, and they set up shop in Detroit after they came into Mexico and walked across the border, and they were sending money back to Hezbollah in Lebanon, the same exact terrorist organization that Israel just fought a war against. And we arrested them and put them in federal prison for assisting and supporting terrorist organizations and money laundering. Now, President Bush knows that. He knows that there are Hezbollah cells and yet will not secure the border. So it makes a lie to the war on terror, and the American people know it. And what we came across, Dr. Stan, and you'll see the interviews in the book. We have word for word the experts in the Center for immigration studies in our government, who keep saying, well, you've got to look at the security and prosperity partnership of North America. And we did. We found that on March 23rd, 2005, in Waco, Texas, it was true. President Bush declared with Vincente Fox and with Canada's Paul Martin the security and prosperity partnership of North America, which ends up being a website in the Department of Commerce, SPP, SamPeterPaul.gov, with 20 working groups, ultimately creating a new government called the North American Union.
Hold that thought. Go right ahead, Jerome.
Well, and Dr. Stan, as we investigated in Minutemen, in this book, you know, The Battle to Secure America's Borders, it really does center on this desire by the Bush administration to create a North American Union-style regional government just like the European Union. And, you know, Dr. Sand, you're exactly right. It goes across administrations. It started with George H.W. Bush wanting to have NAFTA. Bill Clinton advanced it and signed NAFTA. Now the Security and Prosperity Partnership in North America is stage two, which is moving towards stage three, which is the full North American Union. And the intellectual basis of this, you've got the Council on Foreign Relations report, which came out 2 months after this Waco, Texas meeting. Robert Pastor, the co-chair, now he is an extreme leftist professor from American University, and Robert Pastor is the father of the North American Union. He's been writing about it for 10 years. During the Carter administration, Robert Pastor was in the National Security Council, and he was on the Linowitz Commission. He was the person responsible for championing the idea to give the Panama Canal back to Panama. Now, I guess that wasn't enough for Robert Pastor. He wants to give the United States away to the North American Union, and that report toward the North American community from the Council on Foreign Relations says it is the blueprint behind SPP.gov, and the blueprint says create these working groups on an administrative basis within the executive branches of the three governments, can write all the executive and administrative rules and regulations that incrementally put the North American Union into place, just like it was done in Europe with the European Union, before the people realize that their sovereignty has been given away. And a North American identity will be created in which the United States of America passes out of existence in terms of our sovereignty. We'll exist, but we will not be sovereign. We will be subjected to the court, the legislature, and the executive of the North American Union. And that plan, Dr. Sand, we lay out in Minutemen, The Battle to Secure America's Borders. We lay it out in great detail. And I've been writing about it extensively in articles on humaneventsonline.com and on worldnetdaily.com since before the book was published. So the people can see the framework, they can see the links to the government websites where this is all documented, and it's 100% authenticated and true in government websites. It's not a conspiracy. If it is a conspiracy, it's happening in government websites in plain view.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment with Dr. Corse. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I guess this evening, Dr. Jerome Corse, and we're basically talking about the Security and Prosperity Partnership. And you can actually go to their website, SPP.gov. SPP.gov, it's a Commerce Department website, and much of the information is laid out there. Dr. Corse also points out that you can find a great deal of information in a publication put out by the Council on Foreign Relations entitled Building a North American Community. You can actually get the book through Amazon, or you can actually go to the Council on Foreign Relations website and pull down the entire context of the Building a North American Community, which basically tells you that this whole program came out as a result of the meeting that was held in Waco, Texas, back in March of 2005. And then, of course, the other side doesn't want people to understand. Dr. Corse points out this is a stealth plan. And it's quite obvious what they want to do is get everything in place and then go ahead and take away our sovereignty and implement this plan without the consent of Congress, without the consent of the people, simply on the basis of executive edict, executive agreement. And the same thing, of course, is happening in Mexico and Canada as they work to destroy the sovereignty of those nations and, of course, it's the sovereignty of the United States and merge us into a North American Union with no borders, and of course, begin to integrate our police force and begin to integrate our aviation and begin to integrate every aspect of our society so that there will no longer be a sovereign United States. We will simply become part of a new community, the North American Community, which of course is a stepping stone to the one world order, the one world government, that we have spoken of so often. So you pick up the story there, Dr. Corse.
Well, you're exactly right, Dr. Sand. I don't think George Orwell could have done a better job. because it's all done to be deniable. It's done with words that are supposed to reinsure people. Security and prosperity partnership. Well, who could not be in favor of that? And instead of writing new administrative law, the SPP.gov talks about integrating and harmonizing our e-commerce regulations with those of Canada and Mexico. Sound like such soothing and reassuring words that will bring us all advances. Well, what it's doing effectively is saying there is no longer anything such as U.S. law or U.S. administrative law or U.S. rules and regulation. They're all subjected to what Canada and Mexico wants. And ultimately, the North American Union will have its own set of laws. SPP.gov is doing things like we will all be, next year, they're going to start issue biometric cards to the trusted travelers and the trusted traders of North America. If you get one of these cards and you're one of the 30 million Mexicans that issued a trusted trader, trusted traveler, North American biometric card, you'll be able to come across the border as easily as swiping a credit card through a credit card machine at a grocery checkout. And it'll take about 10 seconds, and you will not be an illegal immigrant. As a North American citizen, you'll have a right to go anywhere in North America you want. The border will be erased to trusted traders and travelers in North America, and you can then live, work, get benefits anywhere you want to go. So if we have another 30 million Mexicans coming here, they'll all be trusted North American traders or travelers. These NAFTA superhighways, Dr. Santa, we're planning to build, go to keeptexasmoving.com. You'll see the Trans-Texas Corridor, which is 4 football fields full wide of highway. It's going to be built parallel to Interstate 35. It's going to be started next year. You can see the 4,000-page environmental statement on keeptexasmoving.com and reassure yourself with the artist drawings there. It's really going to be built, and this is not made up. The hearings have just been held in Texas this summer. The land's ready to be seized by eminent domain by Governor Perry the minute he wins the re-election in November. That's his plan. And it'll come in through Laredo, Texas, and Mexican trucks who will be trusted traders will come across the border with their Sentry electronic chips. No one will care that the Mexican drug cartels have been buying Mexican trucking companies to launder money and to get ready to transport marijuana and methamphetamines and other drugs, because they'll be trusted traders, and our borders will be wide open to them, coming across as easy as going through an easy pass on a freeway today. And when this happens, even Mexico knows that Kansas City, just look at NASCOCorridor.com, NASCOCorridor.com, all one word, like Nancy Alpha Sam Charlie Oscar Corridor.com, one word, NASCO Corridor. You'll see on there the plan. Well, NASCO says, oh, no, we're not building anything. They've got a debunking text on this. No, we're not building any NAFTA superhighway. But their members are. NASCO is a trade organization. It doesn't build anything. It's deniable. But, of course, Kansas City Smartport, who is a member of NASCO Corridor, is going to put a Mexican customs office in their inland port in Kansas City. Now, it's a ridiculous thing. Kansas City's got an inland port. It's going to have a Mexican customs office in the middle of the United States. But, of course, we've got to accommodate all these Mexican trucks and Mexican trains with the goods coming in from Red China through Mexican ports like Lazaro Cardenas. And everything I just said is right there on the website of Kansas City Smartport. You can see it right there in the documents published on the website, with arrows drawn from China through Lazaro Cardenas up through Laredo, Texas, right into Kansas City. That's the plan, Dr. Stan. That's the international globalist plan.
And, of course, what this will do is do away with our Teamsters Union. It'll crush their strength. It'll do away with the Longshoremen's Union. And perhaps you can argue that these unions have misused their power. They've been too strong. But what you're really seeing is the destruction of the union movement in the United States, which has been the only counter to the power, of corporations, which certainly many of them really did exploit the laborers. And so you needed a balance of power. But that power will be gone, and it's all going to be very much one-sided. In fact, we're not going to have the great corporations here in the United States. Our great corporations are moving overseas where they can have access to cheap labor and then ship the things here into the United States. What you're seeing is the destruction of the infrastructure of the United States. Our manufacturing, our productive jobs, even our electronic industry, much of this is moving offshore. And certainly many of our chip manufacturers, and about the only thing we're still going to be manufacturing, at least for a time, maybe Wheaties and a few of the breakfast foods that we have. And but even much of our agriculture is going to come under increasing pressure. And so much of our agriculture now really is coming from other countries being brought into America. And won't it be wonderful? We'll just have all these wonderful cheap products coming in from Mexico, coming in from China. But the problem is there are going to be an awful lot of people who will not have the money to do it because they're not going to have jobs. I believe that these people know exactly what they're doing. There is an elite who really believes that we should do away with national sovereignty. They think that national sovereignty is the enemy. And they're lying to the American people about what their real intent is, exactly as their counterparts in Europe lied to the Europeans in the various countries there about the intent to create a European Union, which was not a trade agreement. It was a plan for a European government and a European parliament, a European administration, and a European currency, and all of those things were brought in without the consent of the people. And recently, of course, several of the countries over there, the people at plebiscite, you know, said they did not want to give up their sovereignty, France and the Netherlands. So they're going ahead to do it anyway, because you see, ladies and gentlemen, they really don't care how the people feel. The elite has their own plan. They want to create a feudal society. And it's happening right before your eyes. And the fact that you won't hear this discussed by Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity, you won't hear this written up in most of our newspapers and magazines, simply is a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. Why don't you just pick up this story there, Jerome? I know you've been to Washington, D.C. to talk to the congressmen, and most of them have no idea what's happening, do they?
That's exactly right, Dr. Stan. I've sat down with congressmen at their own computers and showed them the government websites we refer to, SPP.gov, KeepTexasMoving.com, NASCOCorridor.com. They've never seen them. We devote a whole chapter in Minutemen, this book Minutemen, The Battle to Secure America's Borders, and describe exactly how the 21st century slave trade is being formed. The whole idea, even the maquiladoras, these sweatshop factories that form south of the border with Mexico after NAFTA. They had 3 million people working in them at the height, 1990s, paid about $1 an hour. Well, those are not even cheap enough today for the Walmart and the Kmart and the Home Depot, you know, international capitalists, the families that own those companies, to make more billions. They've gone now to China. And in China, they can get people who are either truly slave labor in slave concentration political camps, or people who are in virtual slave camps, paid 30 cents an hour to make their sneakers and their clothes and their electronic goods, put them in containers, and bring them into container ships, these new giant container ships containing 12,500 containers, which are going to be delivered in the next few years. And the whole idea is to create a slave labor trade that can be exploited with no regard to human rights, simply because it will make more billions for the international capitalists who own these corporations like Walmart.
Well, those of you who heard our program a couple of days ago where we discussed a book called Millennium by Jacques Attali, who is, of course, one of the leading bankers of Europe, runs a bank with $9 or $12 billion. But he talks about where this is all going, as we will have a ruling elite, we will have a people of great wealth, and then most people will be impoverished. There will be nomads simply looking for sustenance, traveling throughout the world in hope, the hope of the living dead. That was his term, not mine. Well, Dr. Corsi, pick up the story there. And, of course, what did the congressman say when you point out what's going on. Isn't there an outcry from some people in our legislature that our sovereignty is being sacrificed on the altar of expediency, and the duly elected representatives of this nation, you know, don't even know what's going on and have never been consulted?
Well, the first reaction many congressmen have is they can't believe it. It takes them a while to absorb it. As they start absorbing it, they're worried they're going to get thrown out of office once the people find out it's going on. So it's going to take great courage, and there are a few congressmen who are exhibiting this courage, like Tom Tancredo in Colorado. You've got Steve King in Iowa. You're finding Congressman Rogers, Mike Rogers in Alabama. They're beginning to write letters and demand investigations of SPP.gov. I think after the congressional elections in November, this move is going to pick up. I see programs such as yours, Dr. Stan, are getting the word out there. 6 months ago, no one had heard of the SPP.gov or the North American Union. Now, after Minutemen, the Battle to Secure America's Borders is out there, the book is in the bookstores, on Amazon.com, people are reading about it. It's hard and harder every day to suppress the story that the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America is happening in a major, major way. We published the photographs of the meetings. You can see the meetings of, you know, the various business leaders of the three countries organized in a North American Competitiveness Council meeting in the Department of Commerce, part of SPP.gov, creating multilateral new regulations, crossing borders without regard to the sovereignty of any of the nations, changing regulations. You know, all of our aviation regulations have been changed, Dr. Stan. Now, our GPS systems, the control, the guidance of air traffic control in the United States have been shared and given away to Mexico and Canada. I doubt very much if there's any treaty there that authorizes that or any law that authorizes the Department of Transportation to do it, but they've just done it in the interest of integrating and harmonizing with Mexico and Canada. And we document this in the book. We write a whole chapter on the Catholic Church, Dr. Stanton, and I'm Catholic. I was born and raised Roman Catholic. I'll die Roman Catholic. And we talked to the Catholic Church and got reassured Jim Gilchrist is a Catholic, too, that we weren't going to be excommunicated because it was not a matter of doctrine that the Church is teaching.
freedom here at home, not by accident, but part of a very, very carefully conceived and well-coordinated plan. Well, Dr. Corsi, where could people get your book? Who did publish that?
It's published by World Ahead Publishing.
All right.
It's available on the Internet at Amazon.com. It's a very good way to get it. It'll be delivered immediately. It's available on WorldNetDaily.com. And it's been well carried by the Barnes & Noble stores, and many of the border stores has it as well. It's out there, and the Internet, Amazon.com, gives very quick and reliable delivery of it as well.
All right, fine. We would really like to. We'll call you off the air and find out what your what the publisher's number is so we can actually carry the book here, because I think it's an important book. It's a very important subject, and this, of course, gives great information. People have to understand what is happening is not happening by accident. It's happening by stealth. These people do not want the American people to know. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, that's right. You know, Dr. Sam, we write a whole chapter on the drug war. People have got to realize that there's a lot of economics here from Mexico. The 30 million, we document 30 million illegal immigrants from Mexico. They're sending back $30 billion to Mexico every year in remittances from the jobs they have in the United States. That's one of Mexico's biggest sources of foreign investment, or foreign exchange capital, as much as the oil industry or tourism. Then the drug industry. We document, and we talked in writing Minutemen Battle Secure America's Borders, we talked to government officials. We include the interviews in the book. The FBI told us that this El Salvadorian gang, MS-13, with tattoos all over their bodies, is in 3,000 American communities and out of control. That's not just in Los Angeles. That's 3,000 American communities. And what the gang does is it's a drug-dealing gang, and they steal cars, and they send the cars back to Mexico for the market in Latin America and South America and in Mexico. And we documented that the drugs coming across into the United States are billions of dollars of drugs. It is the biggest business of Mexico, drugs, not oil, not tourism, drugs. And we talked to the FBI in the book, who advised people not to go to Mexico outside the resorts because you'll be kidnapped. You won't be able to be gotten out of Mexico unless somebody goes down and pays a bribe. We document the drug war. It's going across from Nuevo Laredo into Laredo, Texas. The armed incursions of Mexican armed forces that are coming across the border and supporting the drug trade. We quote the FBI that these incursions are happening. If you want to see the evidence of it, the documentation, the footnote, all you have to do is read the chapter in Minutemen, the Battle of Secure America's Borders on the drug trade. And you'll see that methamphetamine manufacturing has moved into Mexico.
Well, my understanding is that this MS-13 gang that you're talking about, sometimes fellas even have to kill somebody before they can get into the gang. They have to prove themselves.
That's exactly right, Dr. Sand. There are rituals to get in. The gang, most of these gang members are uneducated themselves. They're a street criminal gang, political gang from El Salvador that dates back to the revolution. And they're vicious. The rapes, the murders, and the crimes they're committing in our cities are horrible. And going on every day, 3,000 communities across America.
In fact, CBS 60 Minutes had a program where they did on this. They even interviewed a girl who had left this. And shortly after she was seen on 60 Minutes, she herself was murdered.
Yes.
You're dealing with, about 30,000 people in MS-13,
That's exactly right, Dr. Stan. And with their own hand signals, tattoos, they're not part of America.
And, of course, they're being encouraged to come in. We're not doing anything to stop them. Our borders are wide open, and maybe soon you'll have a local chapter in your city as well. We'll be back in just a moment here with Dr. Jerome Corsi. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Corsi's been on the front lines of this battle. He's done a great job of writing articles that have appeared in the Human Events and certainly in WorldNet Daily. And, of course, being on radio programs across America, I don't know anybody who's doing a better job to get this information out. In fact, it's sort of been like a one-man effort on his part. He's had some help from others, but he's been really, of course, at the very center of this effort. I talked to Tom DeWeese today, who's already mailed out 100,000 flyers and intends to put out 1 million flyers on this very subject, and yet, of course, he attributes his inspiration and the foundation of his knowledge, as I attribute the foundation of my knowledge on this subject, to Dr. Corsi and his careful research. In fact, what they have done, because he's been talking to so many people about the SPP.gov website, this Department of Commerce website, where they coordinate the 20 think tanks or special study groups that are planning on the demise of America. I understand they've even put up now a fact and myth website there, so people will understand. There's just nothing secret about it, despite the fact that you cannot find out who's on these various study groups. You cannot find out what they're really doing at all. This is all secret, but what they want to assure us is nothing to worry about. So you've obviously ruffled their feathers.
Yes, the myths and facts section on SPP.gov reminded me of a duck walking around a farm with a sign around its neck and says, "I'm not a duck despite my quacking, and that I walk like a duck and look like a duck. Don't believe it." It's ridiculous, Dr. Stad. And, we write, and it's also been your great show, Dr. Stad, that for many years have been bringing the theme to America to be concerned about our sovereignty because of what's going on in the global world, where these industrialists, capitalists, are unbridled in their determination to get profits. They view borders as speed bumps. I read George Soros, and it's both sides of the aisle. Clinton and Bush together can't rush fast enough to erase our borders worldwide, not just with Mexico and Canada. Dr. Stan, we write a whole chapter in Minutemen, the Battle to Secure America's Borders, on the Reconquista movement, because the lie being told is that these are just people coming across the border because they're poor and they're looking for jobs. Now, there are some of that going on. That's happening. But there's also people coming across from Mexico who are coming back to take back the United States into Mexico.
Hold me right back. Well, Dr. Corsi has been talking about the Reconquista movement. There are people who intend to take America back. They intend this country back. They call it Aztlan. Of course, a lot of this the Aztecs never lived in, but that doesn't matter. If you can steal the land and the property and the homes of rich Yankees, isn't that a worthwhile thing? And there is certainly a revolutionary component to everything going on, being funded by the Ford Foundation, and people of great wealth in this country who hate America, but they're quite willing to use the radical element, the communist element, within the immigration movement, the illegal immigration movement, because they can utilize them, and of course they can use them politically. And of course these people, the Mexicans, really believe that they're going to be able to take your home. They're going to be able to take your property. After all, you stole it back in the 1800s, and in fact, George Bush has even agreed with him and told the people in Texas, the Mexicans in Texas, that that's exactly what happened. Their land was stolen from them, despite the fact that the United States, at that time, at the time of the Treaty of Hidalgo, what was it, Guevara, something of that sort?
Hidalgo would be out with the G. I'll think of it in a second.
All right, fine. Anyway, we paid for the land, and yes, the Mexicans were very glad to sell it to us because it was no use to them, very sparsely settled, but that doesn't matter. They're planning on taking your property, and people say, that could never happen in America. And I would ask, why couldn't it happen in America? Your local communities are taking your land in the name of, condemning it for public good. And you have to understand that they're going to bring the same lawlessness to the United States that today exists in Mexico. And it's all being funded by the Ford Foundation and other people of great wealth in America, which doesn't make sense. But I'm going to let Dr. Corsi explain to you what this is really all about.
Right, it was the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, and it was in 1835, 1836.
Right.
It defined part of Mexico coming to the United States at that time, a small section. This Reconquista movement, Dr. Stan, and we write a whole chapter on it, is this idea that Mexico was taken away by the United States, and it's the right of Mexicans to take it back. We interviewed the mayor of Maywood, California. We produced this interview word for word in the book. It's a remarkable interview because he tells us that Maywood is not just a sanctuary city. It's 96% Spanish and predominantly illegal aliens. The mayor said that he's opened the doors to illegal aliens. It's not just a sanctuary city. It's a city where the laws of the United States will not be enforced. He will do everything he can to prevent illegal aliens from being identified and deported. He'll do everything he can to let illegal aliens work in the city, live there, draw full benefits. And, you know, this is a town where just a few weeks ago in a very, very violent protest, very loud, noisy, boisterous, dangerous protest that the police did a good job to restrain, illegal immigrant protesters put a Mexican flag up the flagpole at a U.S. post office in the heart of Maywood, California. Now, that should tell everyone where their hearts are. Their idea is, and they stood there in that protest, it's on the Internet, we talk about it in the book, we show photographs in the book of the protests that went on May Day, the Communist Labor Day, where the protesters are walking with communist flags, they're walking with Che Guevara, this mecca, this organization, we documented in detail in the book, that is taking the schools, the high schools, all through the Southwest in California, and they're teaching that the United States stole California, about 11 states from Mexico. It is this Aztlan, which never existed, this mythical Mayan Empire, and that the only indigenous, the only true natives of North America are the Indians, and that the United States needs to be broken up so that Aztlan can be recreated and these states can be given back to Mexico. And this is not fantasy. It's being taught in our high schools. We quote in the book the textbooks. We show pictures of the NECA organizations, these chapters that are organized to teach this theory in our schools. We cite all and document fully the NECA organization. We cite from their websites and their charter that their goal is to reconquer the United States of America back for Mexico. That's what Reconquista means. It means to reconquer. And these protest marches where the illegal immigrants are marching under the Mexican flag means this wave of immigration is unlike any we've ever had in our history, Dr. Stan. These people who believe in the Reconquista movement who are teaching this are millions who are here not to assimilate into America, not to just get jobs because they're wanting to pay their families. They're here to take over. And they say it clearly, boldly, with the Mexican flag at the front, and they make no claim anything else in their textbooks, their maps. There's a map we put in the book, Minutemen, Battle Secure America's Borders. We put the map which shows how many states and which territories the Reconquistas want to take back to Mexico, and we show by shading in the colors how much those states and territories in the states are dominated right now by illegal immigrants and how this plan is going on under the radar. Most Americans are in denial, don't know what's happening. I mean, it's a shocking thing to write. It was a shocking thing to research. And that's why we took the interview with the mayor of Maywood and the others in this section of the book, and we put them word for word in the book so the readers could read them themselves.
In fact, I remember there's one of the people, I've forgotten who it was, who said, you know, you, of course, fellas, you know, you better, you know, get used to it and prepare to go back to Europe because we're going to take over here.
That's exactly right. And, you know, in writing Minutemen, I spent a lot of time with Jim Gilchrist. I joined the Minutemen. And we tell the story of Jim Gilchrist. Jim founded the Minutemen. Jim volunteered in 1967 when he was just a kid, you know, barely 20. He volunteered to go into the Marines in Vietnam and demanded combat. He could have been given a Marine duty and never seen combat. Jim Gilchrist went over and he spent 13 months in Vietnam in combat, just below the demilitarized zone. He went from hill to hill to hill, fighting the North Vietnamese on those hill, and we described the combat that he experienced. One-third of his unit was killed. Jim remembers their names to a person. He's been to the, many times, to the memorial in Washington, D.C. He's got books that document the names of his brothers who died in Vietnam. And we write about this. I try to get the reader to be able to actually live that combat experience so they can see through Jim Gilchrist's own eyes his dedication and service to the United States of America. Jim has remustered the Minutemen. The Minutemen were never mustered since 1776. This is the second time in our history. And when the Minutemen were called out by Captain John Parker onto the greens of Lexington and Concord to face the British troops, they stood there, fought, and died against the British for their homes and their families and their country and their sovereignty, not to be dominated by a foreign nation. Again, the Minutemen are being called out. I've been on the border. I'm going back on the border on Monday at 9/11. We'll be in the border. I'll be back and forth in Texas, in Laredo, Texas, between 9/11 and Election Day. And the Minutemen and women are not vigilantes. George Bush was wrong. We show his statement in the book. He made that statement the same day that he declared the Security and Prosperity Partnership in Waco, Texas. In the press conference afterward, he called the Minutemen vigilantes. I've been with these Minutemen and women. They are good Americans. They are, many of them, retired. Many of them are senior. They've served in the military. They have worked their lives. They've raised families. They're all ages. They're all races. They're on the border with their lawn chairs, their binoculars, and their cell phones. And that's all it needs to stop this invasion. They've proven, Minutemen have proven, we've proven down there on the border, that just the watching and the reporting to the Border Patrol is enough to shut down the drug trade, to shut down the terrorists from coming across the border, to keep MS-13 out of the United States. That's all it takes. And the Minutemen are doing this mustered for a second time. It's historical. It's as much history as it was in 1776 when Captain John Parker stood there with the Minutemen and they saw the redcoats coming at them towards Lexington and Concord. It's the same bit of history, relived a second time, and Jim Gilchrist has mustered it. And we wanted in the book, I wanted, to tell that Jim Gilchrist story of great patriotism, great volunteering for service to the United States of America. He did it without intent for financial gain. He did it with an intent to serve the United States of America, that he went as a young man to serve in Vietnam, not knowing if he'd ever come back alive or injured or in one piece.
Well, I think, you know, the important thing is to understand there are people here in key positions of our government who do not believe in America. They believe in a one-world government. They're globalists. And this is the major thrust of the current administration. They want to do away with our borders, but they can't tell the American people, us poor, simple individuals, don't understand that the superior, the elite, really are much smarter than we are. They know what's best for us. We want to do away with the Constitution and the guarantees of individual freedom and mold us into, first of all, a North American unit, or union is the term that they use, and then, of course, these units all throughout the world, or unions all throughout the world, European Union, American Union, South American Union, Asian Union, African Union, will all be merged into a one-world government because their loyalty is not to America. And when, of course, George Bush referred to the Minutemen as vigilantes, I think we know exactly where he stands. That may explain why he has refused to enforce our laws as he's required by his oath to uphold our Constitution, to secure our borders and to have the government agents and the INS prosecute the people who are knowingly hiring illegal aliens. In fact, you know, it's the most amazing thing. The IRS knows where most of these people are, but the Treasury Department knows where they are because they're all paying money. Many of them are paying money into Social Security under false Social Security numbers. They know where these people are who have come in illegally and are working illegally, and they're setting up programs for them so that they'll have money when they retire after the laws are changed.
Well, that's right, Doug. So we document in the book that the IRS pays out $10 billion, that's with a B, a year in tax refunds to illegal aliens that they do not know really worked and earned the money on which they're claiming refunds. They do it because the IRS gives out tax ID numbers, and they can't reconcile the tax ID numbers with the Social Security numbers. There are, you know, millions of people in the United States, many of them illegal aliens, filing returns and getting withheld under all nines or all zeros or all ones as their Social Security number. Social Security Administration does nothing to stop that or track it down. And, you know, like I said, I voted for George Bush twice. I'm deeply disappointed that in his second term in 2005 he declared the Security and Prosperity Partnership. If George Bush had run on this in 2004, that he was going to create a Security and Prosperity Partnership with North America, with Mexico and Canada, to create SPP.gov and move towards the North American Union, George Bush would not have won a single red state. He could not bring this agenda honestly to the American people, and he still cannot. But the billionaires who own and the family of Walmart do not care about, you know, I believe in capitalism too, but I don't believe in capitalism without morals. I do not believe it's right. I don't care if they're Chinese or they're Vietnamese or who they are. It's not right to put people in slave camps and to build New Balance sneakers by people who are earning 32 cents an hour and are charged for their dormitory and food, which can't eat the food, it's so horrible. The dormitories are filthy. But if you don't live there, you can't work. And if you're 26 years old, you're fired. And they only want women, predominantly women. These are near slave factories. And it's unconscionable that our mass marketers, you know, New Balance, I just wrote about it today in WorldNetDaily.com, they're sponsoring the LaSalle Marathon. It's supposed to be about health. Yet they're using slave labor in China. And you can see the photographs of the slave labor. We documented it all through international reports that are out there. That's why it's going on. It's for love of money, an international love of money, and a destruction of our great nations, including the United States of America, destruction of the idea that our rights are inalienable, given by God. Rights are all going to be given by the North American Union and SPP.gov and taken away as soon as it is convenient or hurts their international globalist aim for profit. And forget about China. They're inhuman. Nobody can see them. New Balance, Nike, Puma, you name it, and, you know, hundreds of other manufacturers all through America, clothing, electronics, you name it, coming from these container ships in China. They don't care about the human labor. It's another 21st century slave trade, as we write about in Minutemen. And the whole idea is the best slave trade they've ever found. They don't even have to keep the slaves in sight in the United States. They're off in China. Who cares? They're in China. Well, they're human beings. And it's unconscionable to think that the United States of America, which stands for inalienable human rights, would allow this to happen for Walmart profit.
Well, I'll never forget when the Tiananmen Square riots were held in China. It was 1989. And we all expected, of course, that America would do something after they killed about 10,000 Chinese, not only in Tiananmen Square, but all across the country. And they just simply slaughtered anybody who had stood up. And instead of that, George Herbert Walker Bush rewarded China, or punished China, by giving them most favored nation treaty status. I think that tells us a lot about the Bush family.
And it's bipartisan, because Bill Clinton came in, he signed NAFTA. He advocated China going to the World Trade Organization and for campaign contributions from China, most of which were illegal. He gave away electronic military secrets that should be kept in our national security. He gave them away to China.
No, well, don't you worry, because China's given them to Iran, and those could very well be used against our troops. And the missiles that China built with our technology could one day, of course, rain havoc down on our country. And you have to ask, how could these people be so crass and indifferent, and how could it be that George Bush didn't do anything about that when he became president? But he just simply smiled and said, well, let's put all that behind us, let's move on. Well, let's get to your website out, Dr. Corsi.
Yes, and Dr. Sam, the book, Minutemen and the Battle to Secure America's Borders, and all the articles I'm writing on human events at worldnetdaily.com are fully documented. I invite people to go look at the original documents in the government website. And the Minuteman website is MinutemanProject.com.
MinutemanProject.com. And do you have a website, too? Or?
No, that's my website today.
All right, fine. Well,
people can write to me at jcorsi, C-O-R-S-I, no dots or anything, just jcorsi at worldnetdaily.com.
All right, and Dr. Corsi is doing a wonderful job really of getting the information out, and it's being picked up by so many other ministries. But you've got to pick it up. You've got to get to people to understand. You've got to be like the Paul Revere out there saying the redcoats are coming, but they're not coming. They're already here. Some of them are working right in Washington, D.C. Well, Jerome, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, first of all, it's, as always, Dr. Stan, a great honor to be with you, and I want to, again, commend your great show. You've been carrying this message forth for many years with great courage, and I admire what you've done greatly. The story that we're telling here on SPP.gov and the North American Union, the Trans-Texas Corridor, the NAFTA Superhighway, the listeners have to be like Minutemen. They have to be called to action and look at these websites yourself and read them. Go to SPP.gov. See it with your own eyes. Go to NASCO Corridor, NASCO CORRIDOR, NASCO Corridor, all one word, .com. Go to KeepTexasMoving.com. And it'll be hard to believe it at first, but read it. Your eyes are not going to be lying as you read the words. There's going to be thousands of people in Texas who vote for Governor Perry. And then Governor Perry is going to turn around and he's going to issue them under the Hilo decision, the court decision. He's going to issue eminent domain seizures of their homes because the Trans-Texas Corridor is coming right through their property. And these people who vote for Governor Perry or lose their homes didn't take the time to attend a hearing this summer, or to go to the website, KeepTexasMoving.com, and look at the maps which are there, which they could have seen that this Trans-Texas Corridor was coming over their backyard. This is 4 football fields wide of backyards. This will cut communities parallel to Interstate 35 in half. It's going to take people's property away permanently, and they won't get paid. But yet they'll have voted for Governor Perry, because they didn't listen, they didn't believe, and they didn't take the time to see it was happening. It's happening, and it's real, Dr. Stan. Just as SPP.gov is going on, and the North American Union is going to be created, as Robert Pastor's dream, the father of North America, read the book, read the articles, go to the websites, and see for yourself that this is actually happening on government websites. It's real.
And I applaud you for what you're doing, Dr. Corsi. We always look forward to having you on our program. Again, the book is The Minuteman, and we're going to be carrying the book. You can get it on Amazon if you want to get it through us. Why, you can always give us a call after the program. Again, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927, and our guest has been Dr. Jerome Corsi. Thank you so very much. So we'll look forward to having you on again and keep us abreast of what's going on.
Always a great honor. Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night, and God bless.
God bless.
All right, fine. Well, I hope you enjoyed the program with Dr. Corsi, and of course, we'll have him on again here in the near future. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we hope that many of you out there will want to get copies of the tapes of this program or copies of the tapes of this program and the program we did this afternoon with Tom DeWeese of the American Policy Center, because both of these tapes, both of these programs are excellent. Now, you have to understand that there is an agenda. If you want to get the book on the Minuteman, you can give us a call. We'll have to call you back when we have the price on it, but we really mean to carry that. We carry one book called Fighting Immigration Anarchy. We think it's a very, very good book. We have a 4-tape set on immigration. We have a fascinating video It was made a number of years ago. It's basically David Rockefeller. David Rockefeller, who really is the major culprit behind so much of what's going on, having led the Council on Foreign Relations as vice president for 10 years and as president for, I think, 15 years. And of course, he organized the Trilateral Commission and the Bilderbergers and all of these groups that are intent upon destroying America and enslaving you and destroying your wealth and your family. And, of course, David Rockefeller is talking, and you'll hear him talking about the American Union, which they wanted to get in by 2005. Now they put the date off to 2010, but that has always been his goal. If you've not yet read David Rockefeller's memoirs, where he says, you know, some people say our family is part of a cabal that is conspiring with others to create a new international economic order, and if that's the charge, I stand guilty. Also, in fact, his daughter is a very good friend of that great humanitarian, Fidel Castro. It's all in his memoirs. They're available through Radio Liberty. We have video, actually it's a DVD called The Conquest of Aslan, put out by Glenn Spencer. And then, of course, we have our four-tape set with interviews with Glenn Spencer, just four-tape set on immigration. We actually are carrying something new. It's called the Freedom Documents. They're basically all of the documents having to do with the formation of America. And certainly the Declaration, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, but George Washington's farewell address and Abraham Lincoln's addresses and all of the great addresses and all of the great documents, all in one place in a beautifully bound document. And we're carrying this. Chuck Baldwin puts them out, but they're available to Radio Liberty. Just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We want to mention, of course, we are having our yearly conference, the Radio Liberty annual seminar. It'll be on the 29th of October. A lunch will be served. It'll go from early morning to late in the evening. We're going to have Constance Cumby here. We're going to have Chris Pinto. We're going to have a great slate of speakers. And we do hope you can come and bring your friends. We'd like a great turnout. It's on a Sunday, but it's the only time we can get that meeting hall. It's the best one available. If you're from outside the area and you want to come here, we're going to have a block of rooms at one of the local hotels. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We are, of course, going to be carrying ready reserve foods. If you'd like to get a catalog on that and if you want emergency food available or emergency supplies, because please believe me, ladies and gentlemen, the Bush administration is intent upon expanding the war in the Middle East and going to war with Iran, and they're just looking for an excuse. You better make your preparations now, and if you'd like to get that food catalog or our health catalog or just our regular catalog, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you haven't yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, to understand the spiritual force behind what's going on today, why you would need to get that, or the video, or the DVD, or get the Brotherhood of Darkness special, which has the book and either the DVD or video, and then, of course, an audio tape. Get the information and help us to get it out across America, because we are truly involved in a spiritual battle that's being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. And then, of course, we hope you want to get our video on the World Revolution to really understand why Cuba went communist. It went communist because we brought communism to Cuba intentionally and purposely, and you'll hear my interview with the American ambassador to Cuba at that time. And then, of course, pray for America, pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please do not call in unless we ask for calls, because for this hour we're going to have with us Andrew Skousen from World Affairs Brief. That's World Affairs Brief. And of course, Joel Skousen is Andrew's father. And they do a great job. Andrew is one of the researchers getting those articles up on the Internet, those articles that I read every single day. How do you keep track of what's really going on in the world? Well, one of the best ways to do it is to go to World Affairs Brief and just scan down the page, and there are a number of articles there you'll want to pull down and read. And they go to all the other websites that you and I don't get a chance to go to, and they do a great job of distilling the news for us. And I want to thank you, Andrew, for all the work you and your dad and the rest of the staff do.
Our pleasure, Dr. Stan, and thanks for having me on tonight.
Well, it's always good to have you. Well, let's get started. What are we going to talk about this evening?
Well, there are quite a few stories to cover tonight. I'd like to try to talk a little bit about Iran. In our opinion, it looks like we're trying to create a case to attack Iran, just like we did with Iraq a while ago.
Yeah.
I'd also like to talk about some of the interesting developments with airline security. And if we have time, there's some very interesting things to talk about with regard to the aftermath of the Israel-Lebanon war and what effects that's having on the politics in that area.
All right, fine. We'll just go ahead and get started.
Great. Well, let's start with Iran. There's been a pattern of phony diplomacy and kind of the prepping for war, similar to what we saw just prior to the attacks or to this country attacking or invading Iraq. This time, though, the target of the diplomacy and talks and efforts of the Bush Department is the country of Iran. And it appears to us that the exact same tactics of falsifying information or blowing it out of proportion is going on here. In
yeah.
fact, IPS News issued a rather critical assessment of the U.S. claims to be supposedly exhausting every diplomatic effort to bring Iran to the negotiating table.
Now, I think it's really so interesting that the Bush administration claims that Iran is going to be able to build nuclear weapons in any day now, a few weeks, a few months, certainly a very, very short period of time, and will threaten certainly Israel and the peace of the world. And yet the Central Intelligence Agency has repeatedly said there is absolutely no evidence that, you know, Iran will be able to build a nuclear weapon probably for another 10 years. And then we see Ahmadinejad here, President Ahmadinejad, just maybe a month or so ago, talking about how Iran now is able to enrich uranium. Why would he make a foolish statement like that? Unless, of course, Iran is doing everything they can to get us to attack them. What is going on, ladies and gentlemen, if you look at things normally? None of it makes sense, unless, of course, there is another agenda, there's another script they're following, and they want to plunge America into a much even larger war in the Middle East, a war which we will never be able to win. Well, Andrew, why don't you go ahead and pick up the story there?
Thanks. Yeah, this is rather interesting what happens here. Quoting from the IPS News, it says this: even before Iran gave its formal counteroffer to ambassadors of the U.S., Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and China Tuesday, the George Bush administration had already begun the process of organizing sanctions against Iran. Washington had already held a conference call on sanctions on Sunday with French, German, and British officials, according to the Washington Post. So both the Bush administration was organizing sanctions before Iran had even refused the negotiations. And this ends what appeared on the surface to be a genuine multilateral initiative for negotiations with Iran under the terms that it would give up its nuclear program. The history of this proposal shows that the Bush administration was determined from the beginning that it would fail, so that this proposal's failure could bring a halt to multilateral diplomacy on Iran's nuclear program that the hardliners in the administration had always found a hindrance to their policy. Dr. Stanley, what we think is happening here is a strategy that the U.S. took with Iraq as well, which is to give the appearance of seeking a diplomatic solution, but at the same time sabotaging the process by making their demands for coming to the diplomatic table so high that they knew that the other country would have to turn them down. We saw this with Iraq, and it's happening now with Iran.
We saw this with Afghanistan, where the Afghans offered to send Osama bin Laden to the United States if we just show them the evidence against him, and we wouldn't do that. They offered to send Osama bin Laden out of the country to another nation, where he could be tried for this crime. They offered, to send him out of the country. And there was no offer that the Afghan government could make that we would have acceded to. We demanded they turn over every leader of Al-Qaeda, but we didn't tell them who they were, and then we immediately attacked. We had the men in place within 27 days of the attack on the World Trade Center. We had our troops on the ground in Afghanistan. There's no way you could launch an attack that quickly unless it's all planned ahead of time. And, of course, this is exactly what we did with the war with Japan. We made impossible demands on them. We put sanctions on them, knowing full well it would lead to war. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and people have forgotten history. And as George Santayana said, those who cannot remember history are condemned to repeat it. And it was the techniques that we'd used to get into the Second World War. It was the technique that we used, to get into the Afghan War, the first Gulf War. Why, of course, all we had to do, in fact, if you read the book, Five Presidents, by Bob Woodward, he tells you that there was a meeting in the Oval Office where James Baker was there and Brent Scowcroft and Colin Powell. And two of them wanted, of course, to negotiate with Saddam Hussein to tell him to get out of Kuwait, or either that we were going to come over there. And, of course, George Herbert Walker Bush, according to Bob Woodward, said, no, you cannot go over to negotiate with Saddam Hussein and tell him to get out of Kuwait. We need this war. We have to have this war. Now, that was the first Gulf War. I bet most people have never heard that quotation. Anybody who'd like the pages out of the book would be glad to send it to you. We have to have this war. That was the first Gulf War in 1991. So it's almost as if everything's going according to a script. I mean, we wanted the war with Afghanistan, we wanted the war with Iraq, and now it appears that we want a war with Iran, and none of this really makes sense unless there's another agenda.
That's absolutely right, Dr. Sam. And that's a very good point about the history of this, with paralleling what has happened previously, because it's rather difficult for a country to allow its citizens to the point of open war with another country. And often it takes instigation by the opposite side to be able to justify going to war, which is, as you pointed out, what happened with Japan. If Pearl Harbor hadn't happened, there's no way we could have convince the American people to go to war with Japan. And they had attempted to inflame this multiple times. There is a situation with a destroyer out in the waters of the Pacific almost trying to get sunk by a Japanese submarine to inflame the war, and that didn't work out. So, you know, they enticed Japan into attacking Pearl Harbor. And a similar but more deceptive situation is going on now with Iran. They have to make it look to the American people like they're doing everything they can diplomatically to not go to war with Iran, but at the same time make it impossible for Iran to concede diplomatically to require that there is eventually a conflict that comes out of this. And how is this happening now? Well, listen to what the acting State Department spokesman Gonzalo Gallegos told a news conference. He said, "We acknowledge that Iran considers its response to the so-called incentives proposal as a serious offer, and we will review it. The response, however, falls short of the conditions set by the Security Council, which require the full and verifiable suspension of all enrichment-related and reprocessing activities." In other words, what he's saying is that it doesn't matter what compromises Iran brings to the table, as long as Iran fails to fully suspend its enrichment activities, the U.S. will not engage in further talk. And yet, the U.S. knows that Iran won't give this up, because this is the purpose of the talks, is to give this up. And if Iran already gives it up before it gets to the table with the talks, what do they have to leverage with? So they know that they're sabotaging this process before even getting to the discussion table, and thus forcing Iran basically into a position where it cannot comply. And this is, like I pointed out before, exactly what happened with Iraq. It put Iraq in a position where it could not comply with their demand, and so it looked like diplomacy was failing. Of course, this is more and more difficult each time they try to do this, because now we're not only embroiled in Afghanistan, we're embroiled in Iraq, we're embroiled in Pakistan. You know, there's now the new Lebanon situation, and quite honestly, the U.S. allies are increasingly reluctant to go to war again. There was a quote from Helen Cooper in the New York Times, who quoted a Mr. Parsi, who said that there is a downward spiral if the sanctions that they're proposing against Iran don't work. European diplomats are worried about this downward spiral. They've been dragged into three wars over there by the U.S., Iraq, Afghanistan, and Lebanon. They don't want a fourth.
Well, of course, our leaders are intent upon getting us into the war. And really, of course, England is going to be a very, very difficult situation. I mean, Tony Blair is facing revolt in his own party. Tony Blair, the Prime Minister of Great Britain. And he's actually been asked to resign by members of his own cabinet. If he accedes and goes into this war with Iran with us, why, of course, there will be an immediate demand for his being thrown out of office, Iran. I mean, certainly we're not going to have the support of France or most of the countries in Europe. France has large contracts, financial ties to Iran. I fear that we're going to go into war with Iran if we do. Well, the only ally we will have will be Israel. And believe me, of course, you know, if things started getting out of hand, my fear would be that some foolish individual might resort to the use of nuclear weapons. This would be the worst thing possible. The only thing worse than going to war with Iran would be the possibility that some insane individual might suggest, well, things are going badly. Maybe we ought to just use one or two little nuclear bombs to take out all those facilities we can't seem to reach otherwise. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, that's a very good possibility, and something that we've bounced around a few times here amongst ourselves at the World Affairs Brief about what the potential tactics might be for the U.S. if it were to target Iran. And a full-scale Iraq-type invasion seems rather unlikely, just because the U.S. is necessarily spread so thin. I mean, without starting beginning a new draft, there's just not enough manpower in the military. So most likely it would concentrate once again on a mostly just technological weapons, which would be airstrikes, missile strikes, long-range, low-casualty, expensive attacks against Iran, essentially forays in there to ostensibly target their facilities. But depending on how Iraq decides to handle things, they could end up being a much more difficult target than Iraq was with conventional weapons. And whether or not the U.S. would then resort to nuclear weapons or not, it's difficult to say. If they do, it could very, very likely be the potential spark for complete World War IV, because that would put the final topping on the cake of antagonism against the U.S.
You mean for nations throughout the world hating America?
Yes, precisely. North Korea and China and Russia, if they would decide to finally say that, all right, we've had enough of this bullying by this other country, you know, this is the last straw, they've tipped the scales here too far, we're finally going to launch what we've got. Most of the world would probably find that justified, which I think is where all of this antagonism is building, and the U.S. seems intent on actually fomenting this. When I say the U.S., I mean the globalist leaders in charge of the United States. Obviously, the general population of the U.S. isn't suicidal in this regard, but the globalist leaders are intent on fomenting a war, and in order to do so, they actually have to antagonize countries into attacking us, just like we were talking about with Japan during World War II and throughout history. You actually have to antagonize the opposite country until it feels justified in attacking you. And if they did resort to nuclear weapons in Iran, it just might be enough to tip the scale to actually encourage countries to launch nuclear weapons against us. And we are completely unprepared for it. We don't have any enough anti-ballistic missile systems set up, and I think that's on purpose to encourage this future war. But let me get back to why I think it would be a little bit of a handful to target Iran. If we look back at some of the things that we learned during the Israel-Lebanon war here recently, we'll see that some of the technological advances that Hezbollah showed through its resources with Iran were more advanced than what we expected. It looks like... let me just find my note here.
Well, of course, I would fear that they might have some sort of an air defense over there. How would we feel if a number of our planes were knocked down, or maybe our cruise missiles were incapable of hitting their targets, or our satellites were, of course, interfered with, so that the smart bombs and other things wouldn't work? Whenever you start a war, ladies and gentlemen, you never know how it's going to end up, and our leaders are intent about starting another war. Well, Andrew, go ahead, pick the story up there.
Yes. Well, what happened during the Israel-Lebanon conflict that we saw recently is that there were several... Well, Israel has almost always had the upper hand when it comes to military battles. It's always been known to be one of the most technologically advanced armies in the world, one of the best equipped, best at making advances into enemy territory and doing a good job about it. But most of this was the Lebanon conflict, and part of that is interesting to see. Deadcut.com, which is only occasionally a source to be trusted, but often has their facts right, says this about it. Until the Lebanon War, Israel was accounted as an important world power in the development of electronic warfare systems, so much so that a symbiotic relationship evolved for the research and development of many U.S. and Israeli electronic warfare systems, in which a mix of complementary American and Israeli devices and methods were invested. In combat against Hezbollah, both were not only found wanting, but had been actively neutralized, so that none performed the functions for which they were designed. This poses both the U.S. and Israel with a serious problem in a further round of the Lebanon War and any military clash with Iran. Debka files military sources add this. Both intelligence services underestimated the tremendous effort Iran invested in state-of-the-art electronic warfare gadgetry designed to disable American military operations in Iraq and IDF functions in Israel and Lebanon, IDF being the Israeli Defense Forces. Israel's electronic warfare units were taken by surprise by the sophisticated protective mechanisms attached to Hezbollah's communication networks, which were discovered to be connected by optical fibers, which are not susceptible to electronic jamming. American and Israeli experts realize now that they overlooked the key feature of the naval exercise Iran staged in the Persian Gulf last April, showing Iran's leap ahead in electronic warfare. They dismissed most of the weapon systems as old-fashioned, but among them were the C-802 cruise missile and several electronic warfare systems, both of which turned up in the Lebanon War with deadly effect. So you can bet that military analysts are in Israel right now trying to get answers to these questions that are turning up. So far, of course, the U.S. has never suffered any significant air losses, both in Serbia and in Iraq. But you can bet that the military planners are having second thoughts about whether or not Iran has new systems up their sleeve, just waiting for the U.S. to blunder into.
Well, of course, China has been giving all of our secrets, and of course, China is giving all of our secrets to Iran, so I suspect that they'll be able to very effectively counter whatever comes down the line. Why would we turn all of our secrets over to China? And then allow China to turn all of the secrets over to Iran? Why are our leaders so intent upon getting into war with Iran? And why would President Ahmadinejad, make inflammatory statements like we're going to have to wipe Israel off the face of the map and we've already developed enriched uranium? Why would he say those things unless, of course, he is dedicated to leading Iran into war? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our guest this evening is Andrew Skousen of World Affairs Brief, and we're talking about what's going on in Iran. We're talking about really what happened in the war between Lebanon and Israel and how advanced many of the defenses were that Hezbollah had, so that Israel really, in many respects, was not anywhere near as effective as we would have anticipated there being. Of course, I don't know how many of our listeners know that many of the soldiers, the Israeli soldiers and officers, signed petitions asking to be allowed to continue in the battle and defeat Hezbollah. And they were betrayed by their leaders, who were forced by Condoleezza Rice and a man named Javier Solana, who is, of course, the most powerful man in Europe, who heads, of course, the European Union. They told Olmert in Israel, you stop the war and you stop it right now. And they stopped, and by stopping they lost. And because they lost, of course, now Israel is in a terribly defensive position. The military is demoralized, and, we're in real trouble. So go ahead, pick up the story there, Andrew.
You know, you're absolutely right. I think that the Israeli military really did suffer a defeat in its recent attack into Lebanon. But most of that is because of their own actions. This is the first time, really, that Israel has not taken enough precautionary steps to not harm the civilian population. We've been tracking this here in the World Affairs Brief, and recently it's come to light that the Israeli government used a great deal of cluster bombs while bombing civilian infrastructure. Amnesty International, of course, found this report and surfaced it, that Israel dropped thousands of cluster bombs on at least 170 villages in southern Lebanon during its month-long war against Hezbollah. The bomblets that failed to explode, and 25 wounded from the unexploded ordnances. This is according to Anna Nogueira, of Democracy, not Amnesty International. Of course, cluster bombs, militarily, are supposed to be intended to be used against large concentrations of troops in open terrain, not in high-density towns and urban areas where the effects of these are shielded by narrow streets and alleyways. It's just not a good use of this particular weapon. Using especially this quantity of cluster bombs kind of indicates either an intent to harass civilian or just a blatant who cares attitude, which is more typical of U.S. bombardment strategies rather than Israel.
Well, of course, we had given the cluster bombs knowing full well how they were going to be used, and now everybody's saying, oh my goodness, I mean, look what they did. Don't think for one minute that our planners didn't know that those were going to be used against civilians.
Yes, right. Well, it is of course difficult to know exactly how a weapon is going to be used. We certainly did supply these weapons, but I think it is interesting to point out that this is a new tactic for Israel to target civilians in this careless way. In fact, many of the Israeli soldiers, it is slowly coming to light now, actually refused some of their orders. There is a lot of fallout from these kinds of civilian killings and the issues that surround them. There's an increasing number of Israeli soldiers and pilots who are refusing to serve in a continuation of the war against Lebanon. During the conflict, several Israeli pilots actually refused the orders to drop their bombs on civilian targets, and there's a reprimanding going on right now with these people. Dozens of other soldiers have refused further service, and it's the beginning of a movement that the Israeli government, the Olmert government, can't afford to allow to grow. We at the World Affairs Brief expect to see a large crackdown on dissent in the Israeli forces here soon.
Well, I think it's a very, very tragic situation. I think that, of course, there's a lot of people over in Israel are calling for the replacement of Olmert for refusing to let the Israelis win the war, allowing a ceasefire when the war was not completed, when the objective is not carried out. They didn't even get back the two soldiers that this was all about.
Okay.
1,000 civilians are dead in Lebanon, and of course probably 100 Israeli citizens are dead, and how many of the military on both sides we will never probably know.
That's true.
Well, this is Dr. Stan Bowes and Andrew. Why don't you go right ahead?
All right. Well, one last point before we move on past Israel is that the ceasefire situation here is in still kind of a shaky situation. There was a late or a recent and rather large incursion this week by an Israeli commando raid. Ivan Ellen of the Independent Institute reports that this weekend's Israeli commando raid into Lebanon was billed by the Israeli government as an effort to prevent the rearming of Hezbollah, but many suspect it was designed to grab a high-level Hezbollah leader to exchange for the Israeli soldiers captured by Hezbollah. Ellen asks a pointed question. He says, why then wasn't this type of raid Israel's initial response to the soldiers' capture rather than the leveling of southern Lebanon and the killing of thousands of innocent civilians? In our opinion, it looks like Prime Minister Olmert is trying to salvage his reputation with the Israeli people. It's clear that the Israeli Defense Forces came off very poorly with the final their incursion into Lebanon, and so they're trying to fix it, finally doing the things that they should have done at the beginning, which is a commando type raid in for a high level Hezbollah leader to be able to bargain with for these two Israeli soldiers that were captured. Whether or not this will eventually salvage him or not is sort of a moot point, because whether or not the Labour Party is in power or Netanyahu's forces are in power, all of these potential governing bodies in Israel all tend to take Israel down the same path of removing their citizens from critical areas and encouraging more attacks against them, thus setting the stage, we believe, for a future conflict that the UN will step in to try to control that entire region and take it over.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Andrew Skousen. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Andrew Skousen. Andrew, before we go on, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you and the World Affairs Brief, how they can get a trial offer, and how hopefully they'll can subscribe to the World Affairs Brief.
Absolutely. I think that the best way for people to get in contact with or to get an idea of the World Affairs Brief is to visit our website, www.worldaffairsbrief.com, and there they will find links to all of the daily stories that we think are important to supplement the average news reader's digestion of stories. They'll bring up, we have researchers who search all through all of the newspapers that all of the rest of us don't have time to peruse every day, and pick out the most important stories and the stories that bring to light the few details that aren't always shown in the general press, and thus give us more of a wide range of what news topics are really out there. If people want to have more of the World Affairs Brief analysis provided by my father, Joel Skousen, they can find a link on this website to subscribe to the World Affairs Brief, which is a weekly internet brief that comes to your email box that presents a analysis of what's really going on with the news and a summary of the most important items in it. If people don't have access to email, they can subscribe to the print edition of the brief, which comes once a month. It's a compilation of all of the weekly briefs. And people who can't log on to the internet can actually call toll-free and get a free copy of this brief. The number to call is, once again, toll-free, 1-877-518-5888. That's 1-877-518-5888. and that would get them a free copy of the printed edition of the World Affairs Brief, or they can sign up for that service.
And it's really it's something I encourage people to get. It's not that expensive, and a tremendous amount of information, fabulous information that helps to clarify many of the unexplainable things that are going on today. So, Andrew, go right ahead. Pick the story up from there.
Absolutely, Dr. Dan. Let's switch gears a little bit. I'd like to point out some of the inconsistencies that are going on right now with airline passenger restrictions and the continued clamping down on what we can do when we get on airlines and the effect that it is having on airlines, and possibly what some of the more appropriate measures would be in this regard. Of course, anyone who has traveled recently realizes how much more difficult and how much more time it takes to get on airplanes now with the added security measures. And the most recent case of the supposed bomb plot that was uncovered in London recently kind of highlights what happens with this with these rules and restrictions that are going on. Just to fill in people a bit, the London bomb plot that was supposedly uncovered had to do with the with a supposed plot to use common chemicals to concoct a bomb while on a plane. It was it's called a TATP, or tricetone triperoxide bomb, which is a relatively high explosive that is supposed to be able to be made from common household chemicals, which are supposed, according to the story, were supposed to be unlikely to be caught by airport screeners. G.F. Parrish of WorkingForChange.com actually talks about this British plot to supposedly bring down commercial airliners by mixing these otherwise harmless chemicals together. And he has some interesting things to say. He says, making the quantity of TATP sufficient to bring down an airline is not as simple as just ducking into the toilet and mixing two harmless liquids together. He says that the chemicals involve hydrogen peroxide in a relatively adequately concentrated form, which is hard to come by, and but still, assuming that people were able to boil out the water of a standard generic brand of hydrogen peroxide down to the proper mixture, then it's supposedly a possibility. But then you also have to get acetone on the plane and sulfuric acid. And then you have to be able to measure these very carefully and put them into drink bottles or some other form for somebody onto a plane. And then once you get in, you have to make sure that the mixture stays very cold. So assuming that you have access to ice packets, you can put your peroxide and acetone in mixture together, and then add this this other acid drop by drop while carefully stirring, and assuming that that you're very careful and that the mixture doesn't get too hot, which ruins the mixture or potentially makes it possible to explode, just killing yourself. But after several hours of mixing, you might possibly have enough quantity to explode a few windows in the airline. So essentially what this man explains is that the entire plot about this, even under the best possible and most favorable conditions, could not have led to a very potent bomb and to be able to use on airliner.
So basically somebody would have to be in the bathroom then for several hours mixing up this bomb,
complete
with the ice packs and complete with the all these chemicals.
Without arousing suspicion.
Right. I wonder how many people, really think that they're going to be able to get into the bathroom and stay there for hours. I'd heard up to 5 hours. I don't know how many hours it is, but it takes many hours, apparently, to make one of these things. And, then you have to precipitate this out. It's a very complicated thing, even for a trained chemist. And
are
we to really believe that these people with no training and knowledge at all are going to be able to mix this up in the laboratory on a commercial airliner?
That's right. And contrast this with the effects of what happened to supposedly catch this plot and keep it from happening. There was, dramatic inconveniencing of untold hundreds of thousands of air travelers, both in the U.S. and around the world, possibly up to the millions were affected by this. And was this reaction justified for this kind of unlikely threat? The question raised then is this supposed plot actually more about the politics of fear and just another overhyped terrorist plot that supposedly gives more clout to the government's claim that it is necessary to have all of these procedures in place to catch these kinds of terrorists. But the fact remains that this plot, even if it were to be hatched, was at the most an entire week away, and many of the British plotters that were supposedly arrested didn't even have passports yet, which, by the way, in Britain takes months, and some of them didn't even have plane tickets yet. So the supposed catastrophe that was imminent, that required the inconveniencing of so many thousands of passengers, is more and more unlikely.
Well, the thing amazing thing about this, Andrew, is, if they had wanted to instill these restrictions as far as taking planes fluids out of the planes, you would have think they would have done it before they arrested the plotters, because once they arrested the plotters, there was no longer any danger. There was nobody to take them on the plane. So, this is no more real danger than it's ever been. It's always been a potential that this could have happened. It did happen back in 1995 when a man named Ramzi Youssef had actually taken a bomb onto a plane and put a delayed timer on it, and one person was killed, although the plane was not brought down. The thing is that they waited until after they had arrested all the terrorists, and then they imposed the restrictions. It was all for the psychological impact on the people of the United States and, of England and throughout the world. It did not make anybody in the least bit safer.
It's true. And some of the results of this British bomb crisis were to crack down in some rather inane ways. For instance, one of our family friends was flying back to the U.S. on an international flight with several small children, and she had all of her children's toys, snacks, and even baby wipes taken away by the airline security people in Europe over this supposed scare. The British travel system is coming under increasing scrutiny now by both people traveling on the airlines and also the pilots and employees of the airlines now, who are increasingly venting fury over the quote unquote shameful and stupid security measures. There's a quote by Neil Mackey who says this, that the aviation industry in Britain is in open rebellion against the government, claiming that the new security measures at UK airports are, quote, bureaucratic madness, unquote, and that it's killing the airline sector. the Department of Transportation has ruled out any changes to the security regime, especially after this recent alleged terror plot, saying that it had, quote, no intention of compromising security. And some of the pilots then illustrate how some of the generic rules that they are instilling with these transportation security officials are having all of their employees enforce is becoming increasingly onerous. For instance, there is a pilot had his bag searched, but not his laptop carrier. A pilot had his mobile, and which is a cell phone, and car keys taken away, but later was given a metal knife and a fork to eat with. A stewardess had her eyeshadow confiscated, but not her lipstick. A crew member had one pair of glasses confiscated, but not another. These are fairly untrained people who are part of the transportation security that are merely following general rules that are passed down to them, rather than being taught to actually use proper judgment in distinguishing potential terrorists or not, and singling them out for further in-depth searches, rather than just having everyone, including women and children and elderly folks anyone who is not even a remote possibility to a threat. To illustrate the possible proper solution to go about with transportation security, you can look to the Israeli airlines, which are constantly under real danger of terrorists and bomb plots. El Al Airlines of Israel does this by doing rigorous profiling of passengers. They have highly trained people who actually walk down the row of the passengers and do a brief interview with every adult. They've been taught to recognize the nervous fidgeting of suicide bombers, or sometimes they have a blank spaced outlook. It's pretty clear that the human factors in the psyche of unstable suicide bombers aren't easily hidden. And if people get the proper training to watch for the right thing, then these people can be caught beforehand, or at least singled out to be the ones to go through a more rigorous search schedule.
And, you know, really what's so interesting, Andrew, is that in the Israeli airlines, El Al, well, they really want to protect the people. They have, on every one of their airlines, they have a defector system in case there's a surface-to-air missile set up against them. They could be on our planes, too, but our leaders really don't think there's any danger of a war on terrorism for a terrorist attack. If they did, they would have certainly sealed our borders, and they would have had every airplane, every commercial airline in America with these defectors on them, that would have given them, of course, protection against surface-to-air missiles. And yet, they have done everything they could to block doing that, as they have to block the arming of pilots, to block having air marshals on every plane. Those air marshals are only about one plane in 10. It's all showbiz,
right,
ladies and gentlemen. It's all showbiz.
Yes, and that's absolutely true. If you look at the proper techniques that an airline like El Al can put up, which does not significantly discourage people or make it difficult for people to travel on the airline while still making very tight security measures against people, you can tell what's going on. One of the interesting points I thought about this analysis about recognizing suicide bombers is that the suicide bombers are always inexperienced. They're always first-timers.
Right.
By the nature of it. That's right.
That reminds me of the story about the kamikaze pilot, you know, who flew 450 different sort of things. But go ahead.
That's right, precisely. And so they are almost always nervous or unstable in some way, and oddbeat behavior can apparently even be observed in the way that they walk and how they interact or don't interact normally with others. Israeli profilers pull aside the odd and suspicious ones for more in-depth interviews, and they find ways around bothering obvious tourists, businessmen, and mothers with children, and unless they are of a specific Middle Eastern descent or show certain signs about them. And the Israeli security people of this airline are apparently very good at spotting right differences.
Hold that thought. Well, Andrew, you've got 3 minutes to finish the program.
All right. Well, what I'm leading up to here is that the steps taken by the security administrations currently with both here in the U.S. and in the U.K. is that they are relying on hiring fairly dumbed down, low-wage people who are not capable of being trained, because the way the system is set up, we have a need for a large number of people rather than a few select highly trained people, and consequently our security agency, the TSA, hires a wide variety of ordinary people or minorities because of hiring preferences, and tell them to follow generic, stupid rules that just end up inconveniencing people. And their motto is to strictly avoid profiling, as if it were better to inconvenience everyone uniformly than to specifically target those people that look more suspicious. And secondly, because they can't trust these people to make good decisions and to become highly qualified, we end up with small, dumb, stupid rules that don't make common sense, such as taking away somebody's eyeglass container or metal fork, but letting them on with a metal spoon, which of course could technically be just as dangerous as the prongs of a fork, and taking these things away from a pilot and then letting him sit in the cockpit and control these several ton machines is not well thought out, and it just is resulting inconvenience rather than well thought out, well trained people, which is ideally what we should have, and it ends up being a very large bureaucracy and a very expensive institution without the results that we really need, not to mention the inconveniencing of thousands of people and the additional cost on all of the airline industry, which will be, of course, reflected in our tickets and eventually probably hurting many of the systems and jobs of the people being hired there.
Okay, well, we're out of time, Andrew. Thank you so very much. Our guest has been Andrew Skousen this evening, and thank you so very much. We'll look forward to having you on again in the real near future.
My pleasure, Dr. Stan. Thank you for your time.
Good night. God bless. All right, fine. Well, that was Andrew Skousen. Hope you enjoyed the discussion. And really, the World Affairs Brief has wonderful, wonderful information on it. We've recommended to you. Well, this is the time we need to remind our listeners. Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do depend upon those of you who believe that there's a problem to help us. We are carrying the freedom documents, Pastor Chuck Baldwin has put them together. There are about 50 of them. They're the very essence of what America is about, the Constitution, Bill of Rights. I mean, certainly the farewell speech of George Washington, which at one time everybody read. Certainly Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, the great speeches, the great documents of our nation's history, all 50 of them, and they're put together in a beautifully bound volume called the Freedom Documents. You can get them by calling 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we're going to be actually holding our yearly seminar, Radio Liberty Seminar, here in the Monterey Bay area at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course on the 29th of October. That's a Sunday, the 29th of October, and we do hope you can come. We'll have Constance Cumby, we'll have Chris Pinto, we'll have a great list of speakers, and, well, we hope to see you there. But you're going to have to call in. We have to, of course, know how many people are going to be there because we're serving lunch. The number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We are going to be actually carrying the Ready Reserve resources, food here. And if you would like a food catalog, you really should have a supply of food and emergency supplies. I believe we're moving into war with Iran in the near future. And if you do not have the supplies, you do not have what you need to look after yourself, believe me, they're making the preparations to take care of the key people in government because they know the crisis is coming. You're going to have to look after yourself. If you'd like to get a free catalog and then hopefully order through Radio Liberty, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we do carry the Berkey products. And if you do not have a means of purifying your water, the big Berkey Light, want to get the fluoride out of your water, or other impurities, why, we do have those. And if you get them to us, of course, you get a free 4-tape set or video that we produced. And then, of course, we also carrying some various vitamins, minerals, all the things Barbara and I take on a regular basis. As you know, I'm 77 and holding up fairly well. So if you'd be interested in the list of the products we carry, and you'd like to get our health catalog, which has all the books you need to read, like The Miracle of Magnesium. Literally, everybody in America is magnesium deficient, selenium deficient. You need the proper vitamins and the proper doses and things like CoQ10, which have a tremendous impact on energy levels. And, of course, cortisol that you hear advertised all the time on television, but this really does tend to help many people. It's not cortisone, it's cortisol. Anyway, if you'd like a list of all the products that we have, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Ask for the health catalog or the regular catalog. Or the food catalog, we'll get them off to you, and we hope that you'll decide to get the things through Radio Liberty. Of course, helps us do what we do 5 hours every day as we reach out trying to let people know what's going on. Now, of course, if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to. You need to get the videos we offer. You need to get the new video, The Rape of the Soul, the story of pornographic and obscene art in the Catholic Church. And the motion picture was put out.